Okay,
What?
I thought of something like with, you know, the with me being late, like the perfect thing and to show the perfect excuse. Give me just one.
I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake, a terrible flood. Locust! It wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
Yeah, that's what I always go to with my excuses to being late.
I'm sorry, baby. Yeah, I kind of remember that one.
Where he just goes through that huge litany of things.
Yep.
Yeah.
All
I ran out of gas. It was my brother's birthday, you know, it goes on and on. All
I'm
right,
ready.
it's the Chance of Gaming podcast, episode 38. We're 38 with a bullet, you know, 0.38, 38 special, you know. Not a bad band. They had a couple of good hits. Can you guys name one? Can you think of anything but
38 special.
38 special?
I'm sure I have, but I
It's
can't.
straight up 80s. The one I always think of is If I'd Been the One. I think is the one. Come on, Harold and War Games
Okay.
isn't talking
Hold on.
about you know.
Hold on. Was it Hold On Loosely?
Yes,
That's
Hold
the
On
one I
Loosely. Oh,
think of.
all right.
Yeah.
That was a good song.
And they had some connection to they were formed by Donnie Van Zant, who was like the younger brother of
Really?
the guy from Lynyrd Skynyrd, Ronnie. So,
Ronnie
yeah.
Van Zant, yeah.
Okay, hey, I got a trivia question for you that came up in trivia night the other night.
All right.
There's one band. So the band name, the song name, and the album name are all the same. Can you name the band?
No. Is it the one Bad Company?
It's Bad Company.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. That's what I said. That'd be the one I'd go to.
And so we were hemming and hawing over what it was, and there was this, and I don't know who this guy was, but he was pretty deep into his cups. Like he had two beers that he was drinking at the same time. And he looked at me and he said, "I think it's Boston." I
Well,
said, "Maybe. I don't know." So I started thinking about it, and all of a sudden, "Oh, it's Bad Company." And yeah, so that is the correct answer.
I mean, okay, Boston would that be a good guess, I would say. I would definitely go with that. But yeah, it was a Bad Company, because that's the name, which is weird. It's like, hey guys, I wrote this song. It's the same title as our band. What
Which
are we
and
gonna
I
talk?
the only thing I didn't have was the album, which I figure, you know, if you're gonna name your band Bad Company and have a song Bad Company, there have to, you know, have to go for the trifecta there
Sure.
and do the album too.
I always thought they had the coolest name for their greatest hits album.
Which is?
10 from 6.
Oh,
10
gotcha.
songs from 6
Did they have
albums.
six albums?
Yeah. So I thought that was neat. Anyway.
Yeah. All right.
Come on, Harold and War Games is not talking about Bad Company. This is why
I
you come
guarantee
here.
that.
This is why you come here.
He doesn't put out his podcast as often as we do. Even with me skipping one, we're still putting out more than he is.
Oh, really?
That's
All
true.
right.
Yeah.
But it's not a
We're
contest.
course
we've
he's
kind
only
of
interviewing Brian Train, so
Oh.
Who is that guy? Brian
Who's
Train?
Brian Train?
Yeah.
He designed Colonial Twilight for one, and I think Liberty of Death also.
Okay.
And he did Chile 73. And he's got a new game out too. I can't think of the name of it though.
You know, we're also beating Hardcore History on releases too, which
Well, yeah.
Yes,
I
that's
think
true.
every other podcast has beaten that guy
Yeah.
You're
as far as
saying
release schedule.
we put out more stuff than Dan Carlin.
Yep,
Yes.
there you go. That's it.
Yeah. And this is going to be a 4.5 hour podcast, Rich.
With in-depth strategic analyses on every other game you've wanted to play.
Absolutely.
Strategery. Yeah, look, every time I listen to those, and if you haven't listened to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, I highly recommend it. If you're a history buff, it is. It's like sitting in like a 4.5, 6 hour lecture, and it's fantastic. It kills me because like the way it's edited, it honestly seems like he did like one take, like where he just goes, and then talks for 4 hours. You know? Yeah. It just sounds so great. But
yeah, it's mesmerizing to hear that guy talk.
And apparently there is a thing that this touring thing that he did is doing, some kind of like 3D slash VR type thing with World War One that is touring around. A friend of mine saw it in Austin. It's like an installation. Like it'll come to your town and they'll set it up and like you go through it. You know, sort of like a historical haunted house or some shit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I heard of that, but I didn't realize it was a traveling thing. I thought it was just in Texas or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's traveling apparently.
Okay.
So, yeah. So just neat.
Hmm. It's called War Remains.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. That's it. Yeah. War Remains.
So you remember when we saw "And They Shall Not Grow Old"? There was a little featurette at the end that kind of where Peter Jackson talked about how they developed the film and everything. I would like to see or hear the commentary. I would like to have Dan Carlin do a kind of a director's cut. Although, of course, he wasn't involved in the film, but his commentary about all the, you know, what's going on there. And I want to see Peter Jackson do that too, for sure.
That should definitely be a commentary on the Blu-ray, like where you can switch over to the like, okay, well, here's the Dan Carlin commentary.
Yeah, there you go.
We didn't ask him; he just submitted it. Yeah. So we have a sponsor, do we not? It's Alter Dementia, and it's our good friend Mike. And you'll see this in the show notes because I can't tell you how to spell Alter Dementia. It's like Alter 3D Dementia. It's a whole thing. Anyway, Mike over there is now printing Hero Forge miniatures, and so you can get the files. Plus, he has license for several other things, and we have this great discount code COG 2019 for 20% off your order. So you should head on over there and buy something.
And a little farther on, I'll have a report of a playtest of a game that Mike lent me to check out that he can 3D print for you.
That's cool. Yeah, I liked what we talked about previously. That little thing that fits in a tin, that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll be talking about.
Uh-huh. All right, starting out with like what we're playing lately, and Richard, because he was too busy playing to attend the last episode, so tell us what you've been playing, Rich.
I was too busy.
He's on death's door.
Yeah, I was really sick, and I still, what was that? That was 3 weeks ago, and I still have a lingering cough, so excuse me if you hear me coughing or unwrapping a cough drop, but I feel like in Monty Python, where I got better. So
that would in fact not be a Luden's cough drop, correct?
No, absolutely not. Way too much sugar.
Gotcha. All right.
So, yeah, I have been playing some games, though. I played a game. This is actually a game that I picked up when we were at the con over the summer called A Victory Lost. It's an MMP game, and it's really light. I mean, the rule book is only like maybe 16 pages or something, but it's a hex encounter game. It takes place basically right after Stalingrad. So it's the I think they called it the German backhanded blow, and the Russians are starting to drive the Germans away and turn them back around. But it takes place right in that 1942-43. And it's a really fun game. It's got an interesting system where the Russians basically have to. It's a chit pull, first of all, which is one of my favorite mechanics, especially as a solitaire player. I really like chit pull. But the Russians have to pick five different chits to put in at the beginning of the game, and then those are the only ones they ever get for the whole game. So they have a lot of armies that will never activate their headquarters. But you can still activate armies because they have one chit called the Stavka chit that allows you to activate all of your headquarters. And then all the other chits, when you activate a headquarters unit, it can activate every unit within a certain radius of it. So you'll still get to move all your armies, just some will get to move a lot more. Mm-hmm. But it's a really fun game. I like it. It's like I said, it's very lightweight, very easy to play. The map is fairly small. I wouldn't call it like a coffee shop game, but it's not a huge map either. And it plays in less than 2 hours, probably, once you know the rules. Sequence of play is pretty simple. It's just a really just light, fun hex encounter game to play.
Now, one of these images shows a pair of tweezers, I guess, to move move units around. Do you use tweezers to move your counters around?
Most of the time, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just, not that familiar with these games, so it never occurred to me to use that.
Yeah, most of the time I do. There are some hex encounter games, like maybe like something like Panzer or MBT, where it's the hexes are bigger and the counters are bigger and they don't stack as much. Mm-hmm. Then maybe not tweezers for that game. But anytime you're talking about the half-inch counters and there's stacking involved. And in this game, I think stacking is only two or three. But that is one kind of weird thing about this map, is the hexes are rather small compared to the counters, and they really tend to bunch up. So tweezers mm-hmm. are a must for this. In fact, it's I think I have like four different pair of tweezers that I use for different games, depending on the counters. So yeah, it's definitely something that hex and counter guys use a lot.
Okay, I see these counters. I see the corners are knocked off. So they're square counters.
Correct.
But they got the corners nipped.
Yeah. Well, that was someone else. I don't clip my counters. I'm not quite to that level of insanity yet.
Oh, so they don't punch out that way?
No, they usually punch out with a little. Depends on the game. Some of the counters, like, it depends on, I guess, the manufacturer, really. Some of mm-hmm. them are laser cut, and they punch out really neat. Most of them, they punch out in big strips with the little, you know, frayed corners.
Okay.
Some of them punch out, and they have the little frayed attachment in the middle of the counter, and those are really mm-hmm. annoying. But I don't clip my counters.
Yeah, Roy, it is the whole thing. It's to be like an elite hex encounter gamer. You've got your tweezers. Mm-hmm. You've got to have your counters clipped. It's the whole thing.
Uh huh.
Okay.
And then some people, I've seen this done before, and I'll admit it looks good. But not only will they clip their counters, but then they'll go along with a Sharpie and they'll sort of paint the edges of the counters.
Okay.
So they're not cardboard colored on the edge of the counter.
Well, I mean, that sounds like the sort of thing you could sit as you're watching movies or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But when you're talking about a game like ASL, and I mean, I there's probably 6,000 counters at what I have in ASL, and mm-hmm. some people have 10 times as much as I do. So that's a lot of movies.
So with these counters, do people ever like put like a clear sealer over the top of them, like a solvent based or maybe a water based sealer?
I've heard of people doing that before, but that's not common.
Okay. I'd never seen the tweezers before.
Yeah. Yep. I've got several sets.
Oh, all right.
Wow. Yeah.
So another hex encounter game I've been playing, also World War II, is Unconditional Surrender, and this is our weekly game that I'm playing with a couple friends. I've played this game solitaire. I've played it with one friend before, but now we've got three of us. So it's basically all of Europe and a little bit of North Africa, World War II, and there's three factions in the game. There's the Western Allies, the Axis, and then the Russians. It's more or less, you know, the Russians are both fighting the Axis, and the Russians and the Allies don't fight each other, but they're still not technically teammates. They're separate factions. And there's another faction that I want to play sometime that's after the war is over and Germany's been eliminated, where the U.S., the Western Allies and the Russians can go at it, you know, like what mm-hmm. Pat wanted to do. But we're playing the entire war. They call it the main event in the game. And we've been playing for several weeks. I say we're probably gone maybe 4 or 5 weeks so far. We pay about 3 hours a week, and we're maybe halfway through the game at this point. But the guy that played, I'm playing the Russians, and the guy that played the Germans decided to go east first. He decided to attack Russia before he attacked France. So the guy that's been playing the Western Allies has been mostly just a spectator up to this point, while Germany and Russia fought it out. But there's timers on everything in the game, and basically once you go west or go east, you get to a certain point, you've got 13 months-ish before the third faction gets to jump in and attack your back door. So mm-hmm. we have reached that point in the game, and the guy playing Germany has not yet conquered Russia, and he's not even that close to doing so, and now the Western Allies have finally decided to jump into the war as well. So Germany's going to be falling pretty soon, I think. It's an interesting win condition for Germany in this game, though. Basically, again, there's a timer depending on when things happen, But at some point you say, okay, well, this is going to be the last turn. And you know when it is. It's like a year or two ahead. And Germany just has to survive to that point. They don't have to take over a certain amount of land or anything. They just have to survive to that last turn. And if they do, they win. So even if Germany still, even if they get invaded, it's not no guarantee that Germany will lose, except right now he doesn't have much on his Western Front, and France is going to invade him.
So is this, I'm sorry, I missed. Did you, is this tabletop or is this over Vassal?
Yeah, no, this is a tabletop game. I have played this Vassal. In fact, I have played this game Solitaire on Vassal a few times just because it's obviously so easy to set up. But yeah, I've got this one on the table in my game room and they both come over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
And this one is a big map. This one is, it's a two map game and it's pretty good size. So, and then I've been playing Gloomhaven. My Gloomhaven group with my friends is, we did play last week, but we've taken a few weeks off just because they've had other things going on. But I'm also playing a separate Gloomhaven campaign with my daughter, my 10-year-old. And we're having such a good time. I was a little worried that she wouldn't be able to pick it up very well, but she's doing great. She plays the Scoundrel and I play the Craghart and we're having a great time. So,
oh, all right.
Yeah, Gloomhaven with her, and she's always, it's always great when you have an actual good game that you can play with your kids and they're begging to play it with you.
Now, I was going to mention, there's some kind of rumor going around. It's something that got announced somewhere that there hasn't been a press release hammered out, but apparently they're working on a Gloomhaven Lite. Have you heard anything about that?
I've heard about that.
I've got that in the news section later. A lot of details about it later yet, but I think what they said is it's going to be like fewer characters, fewer scenarios, and obviously less money. So, interesting, I guess. I don't know. I don't see the appeal because I think the appeal of Gloomhaven is how big it is. And I don't know if, you know, like sometimes you see this in more in video games, but they'll let you play the first three levels or something to see if you like it, and then you can pay for the rest. I don't know if this will lead into the rest of Gloomhaven or if there's a reason, if you already have Gloomhaven, if you can play the lighter version and still use it as an add-on. But none of those questions have been answered yet. But it is, yeah, there is a Gloomhaven Lite that is supposed to come out next year.
Have you tried the video game?
Yeah, I got that too, just because even though it's super early release, they don't have a campaign in it yet, because it was cheap if you bought it early and they promised that you would get everything included later, I went ahead and got it. And it's fine. It without the campaign, doesn't have quite the appeal, but you know, I've played it a few times just sort of as a time waster. It's fun to play.
Okay.
It's accurate to the game. So once they include the campaign, I think it's going to be really good and will allow people to be playing online with friends and at distance and stuff like that.
What's the next thing you got?
So at our last game day, which was, I guess, maybe 3 weeks ago, we played a game called Thunder in the Ozarks. And it's a battle. It's a Civil War battle took place in Arkansas, which is not too far from here, a few hours drive. And we've talked about going down there and doing like a battlefield visit sometime, because I heard that it's still pretty much looks the same. But it's an interesting battle. I don't know if you guys know much about the geography of southern Missouri and northern Arkansas, but it's crazy hilly. And it's beautiful. Yeah. But it's an interesting map to play on because the hills and the forests are so rough and there's just not a lot of room to maneuver. So it's an interesting battle, and it's a good game. It's another chit pull game, which I really like. It's the same basic system as another game that came out recently called At Any Cost Mets, which I've talked about that on this before. But the system is called, I want to say it's called Broken Swords by Herman Luttman. And he's got several games in that system. And I've played two of them now, and I really like the system and the specific battle. So Thunder in the Ozarks is what that one is called.
So there's a French phrase in here, maneuver sur la derrière, which I can only imagine means
are you gonna make
move,
this a rated R broadcast now?
I don't know. Maneuver around their behinds? I don't know. I have to go to Google Translate now and figure out what that means.
I guess so. The actual battle was pretty interesting. The Union commander was I think it was the Union commander, although I might be wrong, was sick the day of the battle. And both armies arrived at the battlefield just completely exhausted. It took place in March, and there was like a really bad ice storm right before the battle. So there was just lots of interesting things that happened right before the battle as well.
That's, it means move on to the rear. So yeah. There you go.
I guess that's always a good idea to get behind the army.
it's a phrase applicable in so many different situations.
Yeah.
All right, Roy, you've been playing Star Wars Legion.
Star Wars Legion. So I played this on Thursday, and I was kind of short for time, and I got to thinking about what kind of list am I going to put together. And I thought, well, I have Han, I have Luke, and I have Chewie. Let's just throw all those together. And it seemed kind of like a crazy list. And so I managed to run a list with Han, Chewie, three troopers, the Wookiees, which I love playing the Wookiees, and the AT-RT flamethrower. So my opponent had the short troopers with the mortar.
That's brand new. I haven't seen
that.
Yeah,
it is. So the mortar is a detachment. So if there's any friendly within range of the mortar can activate and add dice to the attack, or the mortar can activate on its own. Well, the battlefield situation that we had was limited visibility. So that says in turn one, all max ranges are range two, and then turn two, the ranges are turn three, and then after that, it's unlimited. Well, that really hosed that mortar.
Yeah.
Because I could get right up to it. And I think the...
are they range four, or are they unlimited range?
They're range three to four.
Three to four, okay.
Yes. So if you get inside of their envelope, they're pretty much hosed.
Okay.
So he had it deployed on a hilltop, and it took out some of my guys, but that being so limited, it was really tough to for that mortar to come into play. And then with the Wookiees are, they're like purely hand to hand. I mean, they have a ranged weapon, but it kind of sucks, and they're really just made to get in and start mowing people down.
Yeah.
So that really helped with the Wookiees to get into a place where they could take some stuff down. And I discovered that this is my second game I played with Luke, and Luke is a beast. He jumped into the middle of a squad of stormtroopers and took them all down in one turn.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now this is the Commander Luke, because the effort is not out yet, right?
No. Okay. No. But
the
so
it looks like he's going to be even tougher.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but he's super expensive. He's like, I think he's 200 points.
Oh, wow. So as much as Vader was,
right.
Vader's been discounted now.
Has he? Okay. I didn't notice. I haven't.
He's 190.
In a while.
Okay.
I did see that they came out with some point changes, which I thought were good, but mm-hmm. I haven't played since the point changes came out. So.
Okay. But I ran the AT-RT with the flamethrower, which was fun. And so I ran the AT-RT over into a group of Death Troopers and managed to take out one or two. And then it was, they would try to get behind me, and then I'd back up and turn around and gas him again. And then he did it a third time, and I'd back up and gas him again. And finally he had enough of it, and he tried to run off. I think he had two Death Troopers left. But I'm finally learning how to play that AT-RT, because twice I've gotten it. I deploy it too close to a building, and then like with a turning radius, I can't move it. I either have to back it up or go around somebody I've already previously put in the way or something.
You have to make the beeping noises when it backs up, too.
And so, but we keep forgetting rules, because there's so many little rules to remember.
Yeah, I've
are you me?
Well, I don't. Maybe I don't know.
Look, one of my biggest problems is playing too many editions, and so like we're on the 3rd or 8th or 27th edition of whatever, and I'm trying to do something that they did back in the 13th edition. Like, what? We can't do that now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So stuck turrets comes to mind, right?
Yes. Yes.
What we forgot in this go around was suppression will improve your cover.
Your cover, right?
Yeah, which we keep forgetting that.
Yeah, and then so. I guess I don't know. Doesn't sound like you're playing with Jin, but I know Jin and maybe some other units really benefit from that because they can get up to like super high cover with suppression, and they can take more suppression. And yeah.
Okay. But and actually, I got to the point where Luke got spooked, and he was about ready to exit the board. But then the game ended. Yeah.
Do the mortars do extra suppression?
The mortars are suppressive. Yep.
Okay, that kind of like the mortars on the big guy. The was it the AT-ST?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Star Wars Legion, and then on Friday I played another game of Root. So I played last week, and I believe I played the birds, the Eyrie. So this time around, I played the lizards. This is the first time I played the lizards. And I know that they tend to be not especially competitive. Like, people have a hard time playing them. And I feel like I did all right.
Did they get any benefits when he rebalanced?
Yeah, and I don't know what the difference are, because okay. The addition that I have is the newly fixed one.
Okay.
Or not that I don't have it, but the addition that I played.
Right.
But so I found that one of the things I found with playing the lizards, that if you can finagle it so you have a hand of all the same suit of cards, like all mouse or all rabbits or whatever, that lets you do, so you can have rituals will let you play a card and put a troop on a clearing of that type. Well, if you look around the board and you see like, okay, there's two birds on this this clearing, and it's a rabbit clearing, and I have a hand of rabbit cards, I can play three cards and put three troops on there. And then I have dominance. My fourth card I can put down and put down a garden. And my fifth card I can put down another garden if it's a clearing that has two building spots. And then there's what's the card? I had one of the favor cards, which is it's kind of the sort of Damocles. Once you play it, it sits there and people stare at it and they say, well, when are you going to play that card? And so that kind of made everybody back off from the fox clearings, because at any point I could press the button and nuke all their people that were there. So I think having those favor cards and having them, not necessarily that you're going to play it, but you're going to threaten to play it, will really kind of scare those people away from the various clearings. So, and I did goof one part playing the lizards. So like there's you can do it's also a ritual where you can play a card and score a certain number of points for that card based on how many gardens you have out. Well, so I was pretty high up on the fox clearings. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to just play three fox cards and get 9 points. Well, that's not, it's only one, you can play one fox card per turn, or one rabbit card or one mouse card per turn and score those points. So I goofed a little bit there, but I didn't win, but I did all right.
I don't think I've ever played a game of Root where I haven't missed something. Oh. And it's always just something little, but I mean, I've played it probably somewhere around 15, 20 times, and mm-hmm. there's always one thing that I miss.
Oh.
It's just because with all the factions being different, you know, they all have slightly different rules. And mm-hmm. I haven't even played with any of the expansions yet. I've got the expansion, the first one, and the second one I've got pre-ordered, but I haven't played with them yet.
Okay.
So it's going to make it more complicated.
So we played I guess this is a 4-player game. We played a 5-player game last week, which kind of drug a little bit because we had a few newbies. And, you know, going over kind of the, it's sort of a little bit over the max number of players, kind of made things slow.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that was Root. And then on Saturday, I played some Dungeons & Dragons. And it's that's been a while since I played that. And so we're playing in a Dark Sun-esque setting, but it's not really. I think he just kind of used that for inspiration. So I don't. This was a little tedious. We went to the bottom of a temple and found a tunnel and started following the tunnel. And the tunnel was going in a more or less straight line, slightly downhill, and we were marching for 15 hours, 20 hours. And there was a Umber Hulk attack that happened at one point. And then we finally get to the end of the tunnel, and there's a room that has a hole. So, like, well, what are we going to do? Of course we're going to jump into the hole. So then we found ourselves in another little maze. And so it was a cardboard room. There was an 8x8 grid, which I was looking at it, and the original room that we went into had four braziers in it and a statue. So we went one direction, and there was one brazier and no statue, and some kind of a winged demon that appeared, which we killed, and then went to the next door, and we saw the same brazier and another winged demon, which we killed. And each door was not an actual door, it was a teleport. So we kind of finally got to the point where we realized we kept going back into the same room. But so I was looking at this. So the room is an 8x8 grid, and it got me to thinking about a kind of a neat maze where if you can imagine a room or a dungeon of 64 rooms, so 8 rooms by 8 rooms, and then within each room there's 8 squares. And so if you come in at the edge, if you had one brazier on a particular square in the room, that would tell you what room in the maze that you're in. And as you go to the next room, the brazier is moved one in the direction that you go.
Mm-hmm.
So you got me?
Yeah.
Am I explaining it right?
Yeah.
So eventually people are going to realize that, well, where the brazier is in the room kind of denotes where I'm at in the maze. And then, you know, so if you presume that the goal, the MacGuffin you're aiming for is in the center of the maze, you could eventually find your way there. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea. I don't, you know, it's kind of a maze and a puzzle. So anyway, Dungeons and Dragons, that was my gaming story.
Yeah, right. All of my RPG groups have sort of disbanded, so I'm RPG-less now.
Okay, that's too bad. So, yeah. And then I want to talk about Pocket Tactics from UltraDementia.com. So this is a game from Ill-Gotten Games, and like I talked about before, it is it fits in the size of an Altoids 10, or like I said in my description here, it's about the size of a poor man's wallet. So it's this little tiny box. It's a 3D printed box, and it will also fit into an Altoids 10. And so it's played with 8 dice, and there's 20 hexes, and it's they're tiny little hexes, about the size of a quarter. So you lay them out, and you deploy buildings and forests on the hexes, and you start from one side of the board, and basically you're going to move across the board and kill the other guy and conquer the board. And it's, like I say, it falls into that coffee shop niche, because like I can put my hand and cover the entire board. The tokens are 3D printed, and it's a fun little game. So that is Pocket Tactics from Ill-Gotten Games, and you can get that from UltraDementia.com. He will 3D print it for you, and you can use a discount code.
The COG 2019.
There it is. And then finally I wanted to talk about Res Arcana. Have any of you guys heard of this game?
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
Okay.
No, I have not.
It's and it's been a while since I played it, so my memory of it is not fresh. But it's a kind of a spellcasting game. There was a game called Seasons. If you guys have heard of that, it's played with dice. No?
No, nope, I haven't heard of
have
that.
Not.
Okay. Well, anyway, Res Arcana, I played a while ago, and that was pretty fun. And I would, and I'm not going to do it justice, but it's a card game where you are collecting mana, and then using that mana to buy, to move into various locations that you own, which will give you another little bump of abilities and things. So anyway, Res Arcana, I would recommend people give that a try.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, and I'll have this linked in the show notes. Yeah, I like the art style on it. It looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope it plays, you know, you hope a game plays as good as it looks, I guess, when you see something.
Yeah.
Like that. You're like, oh, wow, that looks cool. Is it my turn? I actually got out and played. If you follow me on Twitter at Chance of Gaming, all one word, you could see that I actually got out and game for the first time. My local shop, Vans Comics and Cards in Ridgeland, Mississippi, has started a Flames of War League, kind of based around Late War. And I don't really play Late War because, I don't know, I honestly don't know why I don't, but it's just never been attractive to me. Mid-War has always been more balanced, and I'm a huge fan of Early War, when, you know, you got these weird little leftover stuff from World War One, and you'll have, like, a Polish force, the French are in there, you know, and all that stuff. All these guys that are gone by, like, mid-war.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, in Late War, there's no Italians either, because they were out of it by then. Because I think Late War for Flames of War is 1944 to 1945. So it's essentially just, like, all the big toys. And that's the attractiveness of it, I guess. So I go out there, and my friend is like, and I'm like, well, I'm trying to dig my stuff up. I haven't put an army together. And he's like, no, it's okay. I've got two armies here. So I go out there, and we play the game. And come to find out, like, he got extra bonus points for loaning me an army. Womp, womp. It's the thing, like, where the company Battlefront will give you stuff, little goodies and stuff, if you play a game, if your stuff is painted, if you show someone how to play, and if you loan them an army, you get extra stuff. So
sounds like good business practice to me.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I absolutely love to see stuff like this because, you know, in the dark days before the shop, which was like my, you know, all my early gaming for decades before, I always maintained that, you know, the guy that runs the shop can really make or break a game being played. And, you know, people were like, no, it's not. It's just the players do. No, not really. If one guy is... the guy that runs it's like, hey guys, this new thing came in and I'm doing all this extra stuff. If you play it here, it really, really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it really takes off. It really drives sales, you know. Because, I mean, that's the thing is, like, every shop will start off with, like, 40K or Age of Sigmar. But eventually, people are pretty much just going to buy everything that they would buy. And, well, you need to keep those dollars coming in. So it's like, okay, well, there's a new game that's out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's try this one. Let's start a Dungeons & Dragons, you know, League Night, whatever they call that, you know. So you've got to really stay on that if you are a store owner or manager or whatever. So it's always refreshing to see.
It's kind of the comic book guy dilemma. That, you know, you got the comic book guy that it runs the shop, and then anybody that comes in and asks for something, he'll tell you about why that sucks. Well,
yeah.
Why would I want to come in here then?
I've seen that before, and I've seen just, like, store owners just be horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, that would be the reason why no one would go in there.
Yeah.
And so, like, the only sales they had were from, like, longtime customers or friends. They would never get anybody new or keep them new. Never. Anytime somebody wandered in off the street, they'd have a bad experience, and then they'd leave and just never come back. So,
yeah, way to argue your way out of a sale.
Yeah, I've never understood that. You know, I really have. And the other thing is, like, if you run a store, you have to make sure to keep, like, you know, gaming cancer out of it. You
mm-hmm.
know, if some guy is there and he's terrible, and just poisoning thing, the whole thing, and keeping people from playing, yeah, you got to get rid of them. You've got to step up and say either you have to stop acting the way you're acting or you got to go. So, you know. Anyway. So on to what's on our radar. And Rich, you have discovered Undaunted Normandy.
I have, and I wish people would stop talking about how good it is, because I don't need another World War II tactical game. But yeah, everybody's talking about this. Have you guys heard about this at all?
We've covered it a little bit, I think. It's from Osprey Games, right?
I don't remember talking about it. Maybe we did. But yeah, apparently it's starting to hit people's tables now, and everybody's talking about it. It looks really interesting. It looks like it's kind of a dynamic map set with... It's interesting because, you know, before Hex Encounter was a thing, before they used hexes, they always used squares. And then some guy figured out a while ago that if you offset the squares to make like a brick pattern, then basically it's just like hexes. And it looks like this Undaunted Normandy has the same type of map made with squares that are offset like a brick. So it's basically hexes that are squared. But and I haven't even seen any gameplay of it or anything, but everybody's talking about how good it is, and I really want to play it, but I don't want to buy it because I've got too much already.
It seems like that would really make your production values a lot more affordable, too.
Yeah.
Going with squares.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Stack better in the box and everything. So so hopefully someone, and I know, you know, one of the St. Louis War Gamers, I'm sure, will pick it up and bring it by, and I'll get to play it. And then hopefully it's not as good as I hear it is, because then I'll probably end up buying it too, and I don't need that. So yeah, it's definitely on my radar right now. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Uh-huh. All right.
Now, Rich, looking at this, I'm getting kind of like Upfront vibes off of it. Would that be safe to say? It's kind of it looks. I see cards being used on the sides.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's got, you know, really colorful artwork. As far as the map and the counters and everything, and it kind of reminds me of, I'm totally drawing a blank on the name of the game now, but it was like a special operations game. I know we played it a few months ago. But yeah, I don't know how the cards work, but it could be, you know, maybe like a commands and colors type thing where you can activate certain things, or it could be like Warfighter where, you know, your cards represent your actual units. I'm not sure.
I think that's it. It seems to be, because it looks like the board is set up in the middle, and then you have what I'm assuming are your cards for individual guys on the sides.
Yeah. So someone come play it with me so I can see how good it is.
What else?
So there's another game that's starting to hit the tables now, and I can't wait to get my copy of it. It's called Red Storm, the Air War over Central Germany. It's a GMT game, and it's the newest in a, I guess you would call it a series. Have you heard of the game Downtown, the Air War over Hanoi?
Yeah, this is from Douglas Bush, who we were supposed to interview about this.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I still have his email if you're interested in trying to make that happen.
Yeah, we should talk to him and have him send me a copy too. but yeah, so there's the Air War over Hanoi. There's another one. I can't think of the name of it, but it's I think it's a Middle Eastern Air War game. But they're all basically a similar series where you're not doing any ground troops or anything. You're planning air attacks. And if your other side, you're planning, you know, surface air missile defenses and setting up your AA and your combat air patrols and everything. And it's completely an air war game where you're sending in airstrikes, you're doing electronic warfare, you're planning the entire package. And it's one of those games that really makes you feel like you're an actual military commander planning something, even more than like, you know, when you're a general and you can see all the troops on the ground and everything, it feels very gamey. Obviously, this is still a game too, but it just really feels like you're planning an attack. And I like Downtown so much, and Red Storm just came out. Some people are getting their copies now, so I'm really looking forward to getting my copy. I got a copy of the rules, and I've been reading over them so I can get ready to play. It's not a light game by any means. Even like the introductory scenarios are complicated, but it's definitely worth the learning curve. And then the other thing on my radar, which kind of comes from this, this is not a board game. It's actually a computer game, but I've got a game called, it's called Command Modern Air Naval Operations. And it's a computer game where the same type of thing, you're planning air and naval strikes. And there's a version coming out, I think it's just called Command. It's going to be out maybe next year. They just announced it, where it's the same system, but you're going to be able to sort of plan ground attacks as well. But it's very much not, you know, moving pieces around. It's more about the planning and giving orders and seeing if those orders get followed properly. So same kind of thing, but this one's a computer game. Again, steep learning curve, but I'm trying to figure out how to play this one now. And just very interesting to sort of try to sit in as the commander and put the orders out there and see what happens. See if your plan makes any sense. So that's kind of what I'm into.
Apparently,
now.
I own this one.
On Steam?
Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. I wonder if we can play against each other. Maybe we'll do that.
I don't know. This thing looks like I played 0.3 hours and attempted, to play it. I don't know. Looks like it's really hard.
Yeah. So it looks like the computer game version of these, Downtown or Red Storm. So sometimes computer games are nice. I don't play very many. I would rather play a board game most of the time, but it is nice to just click a button and have everything set up.
All right. And Roy, you've been playing Tapestry?
No, I have not, but I want to hear about it. I want to hear people talk about it. So do either of you, live in the land of Stegmar there, Rich?
I live in the land of Stegmar, yeah.
Yeah?
I haven't played it. I haven't seen it on the shelves. Interestingly enough, when I was in Miniature Market last week, they had like 20 copies of Wingspan, so that's why.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, but I haven't seen Tapestry yet.
Okay. Yeah, I want to check this game out. I want to hear about it.
Yep, I don't know much about it. I mean, I know the basics of it, but I haven't really talked to anyone that's played it. So,
okay.
Sure.
All right.
So what is the basis of it?
So it's
sort of a...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Roy. You brought
it up. it's a civilization building game where you kind of eventually, I think, you can go into space with it.
Yeah.
But there's pre-painted buildings that come with it. So you have kind of the continent that you are collectively occupying, and then you have your own personal board that shows your city, and you draw cards from various decks, and like you can take a tapestry card that will give you an achievement or something like that. And I've watched a few playthrough games, I think probably at the Stonemaier website, but anyway, this looks interesting. Yeah, and I want to check it out, but I want to demo it first.
All right, moving on to news. Black Seas is available for pre-order, and apparently their box set for it is Master and Commander. So, and this is purely going to take place in the Napoleonic warfare, and I'm a little salty kind of over the whole thing, because I feel like this is what I should have spent my money on instead of the Blood and Plunder Kickstarter that has, I mean, it's on track to deliver Oak and Iron, but it's from Firelock Games. It's coming out, it's on track, but I think it'll be November, December. The scale appears to be about the same, and that's just kind of Age of Piracy. And I play Blood and Plunder. Well, I own it. I don't play it because the ships were cool, and you know, I can field French, I can field British, but it's all in this Age of Piracy, and I don't really give a shit about pirates. I'm much more interested in Napoleonics, and so yeah, this Black Seas box set looks awesome, really, really cool. I mean, the rule set for this is already out, and and I think you have ships that you can get and whatnot, but you can pre-order the rules this box set for it, which is temporarily out of stock. You can get the rule book now. The rule book's $32, and you can order like the French Navy fleet from 1770 to 1830 for $120. Interestingly enough, they're selling individual ships like the HMS Victory for like $38. So that to me, that's kind of like they're doing it the GW model. But anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like X-Wing prices, though, depending on the size of the ship. I don't know how big they are.
Yeah, it truth is, it's also, you know, this is ordering direct from the company. You know, you can get it from our friends at NWS for probably much cheaper, and or Miniature Market or wherever. But yeah, I just not that I found anybody to play Oak and Iron either, but I feel like I should have spent my money the other way. I would have a better chance of finding someone to play Master and Commander, I think. Mm. But anyway.
So, Adam, did you ever get Cruel Seas?
We'll see. Yes, I did.
You did?
The guy I played Flames of War with last, we're actually talking about maybe bringing it tomorrow to the game night instead and trying to play it. Because I have I had the starter for it completely assembled, and I hadn't played it. The only thing that kind of made me pause from kind of taking it up and playing it is... apparently, like, the rule book had, like, a 32-page errata, like, 2 weeks after it was released. And so I was like, wow, that's really bad. That lets me know that you should probably have just, like, rewritten it and just put it out as a PDF or something. But, yeah. It was some ridiculous number of pages.
I keep looking at it and thinking I want to play it sometime, so, but... honestly, this Master and Commander one sounds like it might be even more interesting. So,
it's gonna play similar. I noticed like it used some of the same counters and stuff like that. So,
okay,
you know.
Oh, and I got something I want to say about NWS because you brought them up. So, yes, a friend of mine, one of the friends that plays Unconditional Surrender with me, he ordered a game from NWS a few weeks ago and got it in 3 days.
Well, I guess it was in stock.
I guess so. I just wanted to say that because that's sort of the joke with NWS, and we've made it plenty of times ourselves that you have to wait a while, but he got his game in 3 days.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
What was it, would you say?
Fall Blau.
Fall Blau? Okay.
Yeah. Fall Blau Mall Cop.
Or I was thinking, from Young Frankenstein, Walker, or whatever, when the horse whinnies every time, but yeah, anyway. I do kind of wish he would say, like, if things were listed in stock or whatever.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I'm looking at NWS now, and that's NWSWargamingStore.net, all one word. Like, Red Factories is up to $106. I think I pre-ordered it from him for, like, $80.
So, I got it at the con on the Ding-a-Dead for
$65. Yeah, I know, because we knew that was going to happen that Sunday.
Yeah.
He's got Bar Lev for $72.
That's a good price for that, yeah.
Your buddies. I want Zeppelin Raider. He's got it for $50. Okay, yeah.
I've not heard good things about that. I would not recommend that. I've heard it's basically you just keep rolling the dice and see what happens, and you don't get to make many decisions.
Yeah. He has Master and Commander starter set for $45.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the retail price is, but a starter set of a game like that for $45 is gets you into it. First taste is free.
So this is what we just talked about, though, right? So they want $70 for it from the company store.
Wow.
So damn near half price.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if he's making a little bit of cash on shipping, because you can't get anything shipped free from him. There is no threshold, anything. He just straight up charges you whatever. But anyway. So the next thing we had was, did you guys hear about the Wendy's RPG?
I did.
I did. Yes.
I'll give him that. You know, it kind of made... you know, it made me not go, I mean, not necessarily go buy Wendy's, but it made me think of Wendy's and put them on my radar, you know, and yeah, so.
Have you guys ever heard the podcast called System Mastery?
No.
It's a podcast about RPG systems, and mostly, not all of them, some of them are actually decent, but mostly they make fun of bad RPGs, and I'm waiting for the episode to come out about this one.
Maybe it's good. Maybe it's like, wouldn't that be great if they like accidentally made like one of the, you know, like, oh my gosh, this system is so revolutionary, like, you know, I can't believe this. Yeah.
Now, I've heard that this Feast of Legends is essentially kind of a stripped down D&D 5th edition system.
I mean, that would make sense because D&D 5th edition is kind of the generic RPG right now. I mean, I guess there are others, maybe Fate or something, but D&D 5th edition is... you know, your basic go-to. So that would make sense.
So do you suppose they had to probably pay the license fee, you know, like the OGL, right?
I don't know if there is an OGL for 5th edition.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was going to say you don't pay for OGL because OGL is open, it's open gaming.
Okay.
I think it's like free to use because like you can't, you know, copyright mechanics or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember what the things were with OGL. Okay, I know you could make stuff for it, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but honestly, man, if it was my thing, even if it was free and Wendy's decided to take a run at it, I'd ask for some free hamburgers or something. At least. Come on. So the next thing we had is they've announced the next in the line of big ships for X-Wing, and that is the Sea Rock.
Okay.
Did you ever fool around with this one, Richard?
I've never played with an epic ship in X-Wing. Any epic ships.
I gotta say, I want the Corvette. You know, yeah. Just because it's an incredible model. It really is, and it's pre-painted and all that stuff, and I'm kind of interested in doing the epic thing. But I didn't know this until this, you know, we're now into second edition X-Wing, in which, you know, we have prequel stuff. Apparently, with this Sea Rock cruiser, you could not only use it as kind of an old piece of junk with the Scum faction, but you can actually use it for the Separatists as well. Because it's something that they fielded, like, back in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like really neat. It's like the first big ship for, you know, the Separatists to use. You know, which reminds me, I'm still salty that we don't have a prequel Armada. You know, where's Star Wars Armada the Clone Wars? Why is it not available yet? Or even announced or thought of?
Didn't they just come out with a campaign for Armada as well?
Yeah, I think I have that on here. Yeah. Rebellion in the Rim. And probably just move that up. And the other thing is like my tiny Legion group, we all want to split the box set when it comes out for the Clone Wars, but we all want to play the droids.
Oh, and that's supposed to be out this month, right?
Yes. Okay. I'm almost positive it's like the week of the 25th, like somewhere in there. Okay. So about 2 weeks. But yeah, we all want to play the droids. Not a single person wants to play the stupid clone troopers.
Interesting. See, I don't want to play either of those new two factions, but what I want is for more people to play so that I can actually play my Rebels. I'm really happy with Rebels, but there's no games in St. Louis right now. It's frustrating.
Oh. I just want to go, you know, just annoy people going, Roger, Roger. You know, just that dumb stuff. Yeah.
So let me throw out a notion here about Legion. The guy that I play with wants to, he said, what are your thoughts on mixing factions together? Because he plays Imperials, but he really likes those droidicas and wants to play, wants to field those along with the Stormtroopers. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, it's your game, and if you want to do it, you should do it. I mean, obviously, you can't do that in a tournament or anything like that, but absolutely, go for it. If two people just want to have a fun game and they want to do whatever they want with whoever they want, I think that's a fun way to play.
Okay.
If it's two consenting adults and it doesn't harm another person, then yes.
I don't know. I'm a purist, so that bothers me.
I mean, I totally understand that, I mean, Roy. You know, where you're like, I kind of want to play by what the rules are, and you know, yes, I completely agree with that.
I mean, there's probably something game breaking in there. You know, it's probably there. If you put Death Troopers with Leia or something like that, there's probably something game breaking. But hey, you know, yeah. It's only going to take a couple hours to find out.
I guess my response was, I guess that's okay, but I'm not going to do anything like that.
Yeah.
But the droid tanks look pretty cool. I might end up picking up one of those just to paint it because it looks neat.
Yeah, and I like the Rebel speeder bike. Not Rebel, this the Imperial. No, not Imperial either. Republic speeder bikes with the little sidecar.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, our Legion night is Thursday. That's kind of like the Star Wars night, which kind of sucks because it's people that would be playing X-Wing or playing Legion, and people that should be, you know, people that are should be playing X-Wing or sorry, people that are playing X-Wing should be playing Legion, and people that are playing Legion that should be playing on X-Wing. Seems like the groups could grow if they move the night, yeah. You know, to be on two separate nights.
I see anyway. More people playing Destiny than I see playing Legion.
Destiny completely and utterly died in Did my it? Area. However, what they can't keep on the shelf is the Sabacc game.
Like, oh, really? Sabacc from Star Trek 2?
No, Sabacc. Not Sabacc. Sabacc. Oh, sorry. Oh. Yeah, you know me. I can't gotcha. I can't pronounce anything.
Uh-huh. I know.
Roy's here to judge me. I can't pronounce things. That's his mutant power.
Yep.
But yeah, it's that. They can't keep it on the shelf. And they're talking about maybe like organizing like a tournament or something, but it's a little too close to gambling, so you kind of have to worry about that a little bit when you skirt local laws with stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about
that gambling
kind of
at Star Wars.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that stuff till I started talking to like the shop owners and stuff like that. They're like, when you're selling tickets, you know, to win prizes and blah blah blah, all this kind of stuff, it you have to be really, really careful because if they're like, "Oh, you're gambling," you can go to jail, you know, if they decide that what you're doing is considered gambling. Which is weird. I don't know how like the child casino
can get a
operating.
Room at the casino.
You know, with what is it, Chuck E. Cheese, the Kingdom
Mississippi.
Of the Rat.
You've got casinos in Mississippi, don't you?
We do.
So you can just have a Sabacc room.
Well, we have very restricted things. First, like when they first came here, they had to be on the water. So the first ones that opened were riverboat cruises.
That's how it was here. First, they had to be on the river, and then they started making like a little cutout of the river, which is basically just a moat, and the boat literally could not move if they wanted to, but technically it was on the river.
With us, it was they had to be over water, and so the ones on the coast were literally like just built on pylons.
Yeah.
Just like literally, like you just walk across the beach onto the thing. They didn't really float, but then the hurricanes kept destroying them, and it took too long for us to build them back. So now they allow them within X amount of yards from the water. So, but still, nothing like
you can see the water. It's a riverboat.
Nothing like where I'm at, though. Although they do, before that, they allowed for tribal casinos,
mm-hmm.
And so we have those in several places in Mississippi.
Hmm.
That's where all the old has-been and never-been one-hit wonders come play, you know. You'll see Frankie Goes to Hollywood or whatever, you know, playing. Either that or, like, currently this week is the Mississippi State Fair, and you know you've bottomed out when you're playing the fair. So, anyway, kids, on to Rebellion in the Rim is an expansion available for Armada. It's a campaign expansion, because I have the Carillion Conflict. And, of course, you know, no one to play it with. But, yeah, this is the new one. So I'll probably pick this up whenever it goes on sale. I've never, ever successfully done a miniature campaign, ever. They always completely disintegrate after, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I knew there were some fan-made ones for X-Wing. So for this one, what do you need? You probably need more than just the core set. What do you need to play this?
I think you'd actually have to assemble your forces, and then you're just kind of, you assign them, like, well, at this planet I have this fleet, and at this planet I have this fleet, and you just kind of move things around until you bump into another one.
Okay.
Or invade or whatever it is you do. I mean, that's kind of like the traditional way of the miniature campaign goes. And then it's like, oh, my tiny army runs into your big giant army and gets squished. So, yeah. Anyway. The next thing we had was Reaper Bones 5 is up on Kickstarter. Have you guys ever backed one of these?
No, I have not. I've bought Reaper Bones individually before, but never in a big pack like this.
I got to play with some of them yesterday.
Yeah, they're a really good way for you to get a lot of generic style miniatures. And, you know, the Reaper miniature line to me is always hit or miss. They do get some really good designers, and they get some that aren't that great, in my opinion. But this thing, as of this podcast, has 26 days to go. They wanted a measly $30,000, and they have already raised $1.5 million.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah, so people love these things because you get a ton, usually an absolute ton of, like, I remember, like, the first one and the second one really wishing I hadn't sat it out because people were, they were like, oh, look, we hit all these stretch goals and blah, 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 and, you know, I've got all these miniatures for about 90 cents. It came out to be about 90 cents a miniature or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just nuts. Which did remind me, I don't think I have it in the in on the list, but I do have it saved, and I'll toss it in there real quick. One thing I mentioned on Twitter that I did want to back, and let me drop it in right here under Bones. Maybe I'll edit this out, maybe I won't. But yeah, it's the Skinny Minis. I thought looked really cool, and it seems to be something that I'd back pretty good into. What I liked about these are just your normal kind of stand-up miniatures, but they appear to be, like, plastic-coated.
Like Shrinkadinks. So
yeah. Yeah. I guess so, yeah. Although, it seemed to me, it just seems like they're more hard plastic, but I could be wrong. Which reminded me, I finally busted open my Tinker Turf terrain and was sorely disappointed by the quality of what I got. I backed that Kickstarter, gosh, a couple years ago, and it came in, I think, early this year, and I finally opened it. It's just straight up fucking cardboard. I mean, not even cardboard. It's like that thin stuff, the backing on like an action figure or something like that, or a Hot Wheel. It's about that damn thin. I was mad as hell because I was like, I thought this was like five times thicker than this, you know, that would be nice and hard and, you know, whatever. And that's what she said, but no. So anyway, I probably would back this. Let's see.
The Skinny Minis?
Yeah, I'm looking at the how many sets. Golly, you can actually get a ton of sets here.
Boy, that Albert looks like it's had enough of your shit.
I know, right? I think I might do the $69 gives me 10 sets of my choice. And apparently, like, I had no idea the people that do this have been doing something called Dungeon in a Box, which was like this subscription service where it's like you get everything in one, you know, like Loot Crate, only you get like your map and you get these type of miniatures and you get the scenario and you get everything to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it came like once a month, but apparently they were making the miniatures like this and everybody was like, can we just buy the miniatures because these are awesome. And so that's how it started. They are, with 19 days to go, they're up to $429,000, and they just wanted $34,000. So, it looks pretty cool. I really see myself backing this, but like somebody asked me on Twitter, like, "Hey, do you have a gaming group?" No, I do not. Mm-hmm. So, I'll take them out and I'll just play just myself. Like, "Hello, I'm Mr. Owlbear. Hello, I'm a dwarven adventurer."
You're gonna make them fight and then
yeah,
kiss.
Make it now kiss. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, the next thing we have is, oh yeah, Magic the Gathering, they're going to do a My Little Pony crossover for charity, which is kind of cool. I guess these are going to be alt cards, is what I think it's going to be.
So there's only like a three card promotional set.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, first of all, I think we've way past like peak bronydom. You know, they're about to end the show. It's the ratings and all that have kind of fallen off because all that kind of stuff has sort of died. I will say, also, they've already had a My Little Pony CCG mm-hmm. for the longest time. And, yeah, so, I mean, this is kind of cool, but, I mean, come on, Hasbro owns Magic, and Hasbro owns My Little Pony, so I guess this is really easy, you know, your left hand agreed with what your right hand was doing. Mm. And, that's kind of cool. I will say, they are Silver Border cards, they're not legal. With this, they're going to be on sale on, like, HasbroPulse.com, and I'm wondering... I know a lot of hardcore Magic guys. They're friends of mine. They do not like it whenever Hasbro does limited edition stuff because apparently Hasbro does not understand like how big Magic is. So they'll be like, "Hey, we're gonna have the pre-orders up on our website on October 12th or whatever," and immediately on October 12th the site crashes. You know, and guys are desperately trying to get in and buy a case of whatever this limited edition Magic card or whatever is. And basically it just becomes, maybe you get it, probably you won't.
The thing is, though, if it's for charity, why would they limit it? I mean, wouldn't they want to make as much money for charity as possible?
That is true. Maybe it's not. It doesn't say limited. It is just a three-card promotional set called Ponies the Galloping. All net proceeds going toward Extra Life, and they will have not only sleeves and play mats, too. I mean, the play mats are okay, which I gotta say are better than, like, some of the ones I've seen. Most of them, you know, Friday Night Magic, some dude has got some naked anime girl doing something, or it's like a Magic the Gathering character who is also naked and is doing something with an anime girl. So, it's bad. Every time I read, like, on the internet, like, girls talking about, like, yeah, I wanted to get into Magic the Gathering, and then I was completely turned off by all the gross stuff they have, I'm like, I can understand that. Because I see it. I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The solution, I think, would lie with the shop owner and putting some restrictions down, but, yeah. Anyway. So, the next thing we had was Pandemic Legacy Season 3, and this is probably going to be a really big deal, am I right?
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. We know nothing about it yet, except that they have teased an image for it. All we know is that it has been announced that it is coming. So that's good because, I mean, until I saw this yesterday or the day before, whenever, I never knew that they were going to do it for sure. So I'm looking forward to it. I've enjoyed season one and season two. I liked one better, but I'll definitely play season three when it comes out.
It looks like this is going to close the loop. Every end has a beginning. Like, this will be the last one.
Yeah, and I saw some, obviously it's all just speculation at this point, but I thought this was kind of a cool idea. Someone on Reddit, I think, said this should be a prequel to season one where you play a bioterrorist trying to get the virus out there before season one starts. So. Mm. Because the whole, every end has a beginning. So maybe it's a prequel. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say it better, though. You have to be like, every end has a beginning.
In a world.
Yes, with where there was Pandemic Season 1 and 2.
Did you
now
ever finish?
There's Season 3.
Roy, did you ever finish Season 2?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I haven't finished Season 1 either.
Oh, okay. But... I thought you were in Season 2.
Well, I'm playing them kind of alongside each other.
So you're just going to wait till this comes out and play all three at the same time?
Maybe so, yeah. So there's a copy of Season 1 that's circulating amongst my game group, and then I have a personal copy of it, too, that I've tried playing through and have not cracked open in quite a while. And then there's Season 2 is also circulating in my game group, and I do not have a copy of that. So I'm playing it once, and then I'm playing it through again.
All right, and like we teased earlier in the show, Mini Gloomhaven, or as I like to call it, Gloomhaven Light, or as they like to call it, Gloomhaven
Subtitle. Yeah, that cracked me up. I don't know why they would release that image like that, but Gloomhaven Subtitle.
Let's see, there's no official titles yet, but it is a 24-scenario campaign in a $40 to $50 box, so the barrier of entry is made as low as possible. I will say you're really starting to see Gloomhaven. I think somebody has it on Mass Drop now for $99. So you can get it about that cheap. You know, it's certainly far from, you know, people paying, you know, $300, $400 just to get a copy, you know, because it was really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, honestly, I fully expect, like I said, Dice Tower Con next year, you'll see a lot of people selling used copies of that, maybe, because there were so many of them sold. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And it is a dungeon crawler, right?
Yep, yes. It's a dungeon crawler. And it's a campaign. It's got a story behind it. And it's a good game. I like it quite a bit. The more I play it, the more I like it. So,
It's something I'd like to play. But, you know, and I've seen it at the shop, you know, people playing. So maybe it's possible. Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. So is that it for us? Got nothing more? We actually managed to get together. And, have a show. It's always fun.
Yeah.
Actually getting out and gaming. I like it. Maybe I can keep up and do this stuff and actually have things to contribute. And in theory, this is recording. In theory, you can actually hear my mic. Who knows? It is weird. Every time I get on here, I love this Yeti mic because it saves me from all the stuff I have to do with an XLR mic, but I swear every single time I have to go in and like switch it and tell it that it has one, and it's like, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. And yeah, anyway, you have no idea what it takes for you just to get this point, to get to the sound of our voices. So yeah, it's episode 38 in the books. So all right,
so I guess we're done.
Yeah, so good night
everybody. Everyone.